Well, I am going to introduce our speaker today. It is my husband, actually, and I know every chance he gets, he always tends to brag on me, but I just want to brag on him for a minute because I'm really just thankful for him. You know, we just had our sixth baby, and I've just seen the way he's really laid down his life for our family and taking care of us, and I'm just thankful for him. And he's a godly man as well, so I appreciate him, and I'm excited to hear what he's going to share with us today. So if you would please help me welcome Pastor Matt.
Oh, and by the way, he loves God. So there's worse things in the world than being called a good father, a good husband, and whatnot. So you guys, this side can sit down. This side, you're on top of things. So, all right. Well, it's a pleasure to be with you guys today. We're going to get into a couple scriptures in particular. So I want you guys to head over to Exodus chapter 6. We're going to start out there, and I'm going to hit a few different verses over the course of this message. So, interesting times we're living in, huh? Anything unique going on? Anything weird? Anything at all? Just a couple things. And one of the things Andrea mentioned to me this morning is we're getting ready, and it's something that I had kind of mentioned to some of our small group leaders as we were getting together just within the last couple weeks. And by the way, I would just really encourage you to be a part of the small groups, because it is something that I really believe Yahweh has been laying a foundation for many years. And I truly believe that our fellowship, our kahal, is in a season that we have never been in before. And it basically started almost 1 year ago. Almost, I mean, it's on the January 20th was the fire. And so we are getting ready to come up on the 1 year anniversary. And I believe it was at that time Yahweh really started to shake up our fellowship. He really started promoting us. And he was getting us ready for things that we had never really gone through, and giving us ministries that we'd never really experienced over the years. And I believe he has been preparing us for that. And we're going to talk a little bit about that towards the end of this message. But I truly believe that Yahweh is getting us out of our comfort zone. He is breaking this country in a lot of ways, but it's a good breaking. I have a strong, strong peace that everything that is going on is not something to be fearful of. It is something to embrace. It is something to rejoice in. Yes, there are hardships. Yes, there can be fears that are legitimate. There are concerns that we should have. But when we are able to kind of separate ourselves from the immediate, when we're kind of able to separate ourselves from how things impact us as individuals, Yahweh really lays on us a greater perspective. And he is showing himself to be a builder of his kingdom, not just of people. He's showing himself to be a builder of his people, not just a nation. And he is using the breaking of this nation, the turmoil that's going on, in order to bring himself glory and to establish and strengthen his kingdom. And we get to be a part of that. We get to be the voices that establish that peace and that purpose in a world that just wants to shout about all the chaos that's going on. And so when I met with some of the small group leaders a couple weeks ago, I said, when we get together, obviously the turmoil and the drama and the politics and the conspiracy theories and the controversies, that's stuff that's going to want to be talked about. And it should, for about 5 minutes. When we come together as believers, it is freeing to be able to just kind of unload our hearts and our spirits for about 5 minutes. Because then Yahweh wants us to do something with that. He has people that he wants to establish peace, to establish life, to establish truth, and to establish a spirit of overcoming as individuals and as a group of people. And I believe since the fire on January 20th of last year, Yahweh has really promoted many, if not all, of the people in this room into that role. And the more and more that I get to see you guys, to talk with you, to spend time with you, I see Yahweh is laying that spirit on you, and I see you beginning to recognize it, and I see you having a desire to walk in that. And so I really want to encourage you is that each and every one of us, we're the ones that stand for truth. We are the ones that stand for God's truth. Now, there's going to be debates about what is actually true culturally, in society, politically. And the hard thing is, as much truth as you know, there are so many other evidences and testimonies against that truth that's going on in our culture today. And it can be hard when you stand up and you say, this is true. This is what's going on in the world. And then there are a million voices that speak against that. And you start to realize that most people are convinced in their own mind of what's going on. And that is why I believe our people, that's why I believe the body of Messiah needs to change our narrative, so to speak, our agenda from the political, the cultural, the societal, and then we put it on His kingdom and His spirit. Because there are truths there that no one can argue with, that no one can deny. And I think that's where our battle needs to be fought, is establishing life in other people. And so I'm thankful for so many people in this room have really grabbed a hold of that. I'm thankful for this time of small groups that we have, because it really is that that re-energizing point in the middle of the week. You know, we've been meeting, doing our typical Torah studies for years and years. I mean, pretty much since the inception of Bet Lechem in its various forms. And it's been great, and it's been important, and it's been a necessity, and it has helped so many people establish who they are in the kingdom. But I believe that we, as bodies, as a body and the people in this room, we have been established and we have been promoted, and it's time to do something with all of the experience and the wisdom and the life and the overcoming that Yahweh has given us. And if you're not there, that's okay. This message is going to talk a decent amount about our reaction and our responsibility and our role to other people. But there are definitely elements of how this affects us and how we are a broken people, how we are a prideful people, how we are a lukewarm people at times. But Yahweh is calling us to be something more. So this message is going to be hopefully just some practical application. And I'm going to give you guys just a chance to share some tips, some experiences, some encouragement for the rest of the body. When you look at this Torah portion, you start seeing that there are several different kinds of people that Yahweh is reaching out to and that He is trying to minister to. A lot of times we just look at the world and who God is reaching and we just call it the lost. God is calling us to reach the lost, to go out and make disciples of all nations. But when you really look at it and when you start paying attention to the people, to the ministry field that Yahweh's given you, whether it is an official ministry platform like this, or whether it's just to your neighbor, or just to your friends, or your family, or your job, or whatever it is that there are different places that different people are at. And when we really desire to build up God's kingdom, when we really desire to see it built up in strength and in numbers, and when we really desire to see people overcome and have life, it is important for us to pay attention to who it is that God has put in our life. Because a lot of times we have an agenda when we want to go preach, when we want to go share life. We want to establish, I'm going to share the gospel this time, I expect good results, I expect people to get saved, and I expect my church to grow. A lot of times that's the agenda that we have. But in reality, as priests, as ambassadors for our Messiah, our only agenda should be Him glorified and to see as many people come into a real relationship with Him. Whether that is a relationship for the first time or a relationship that has been ongoing for 60, 70 years that is wavering and needs to be strengthened. That should be our only agenda. And when we reach out to people, it's important to recognize what they are dealing with. Because how many of you over the course of this week have felt broken over something? You felt downtrodden. You felt burdened. You felt enslaved. You felt fearful. Most of us have, if we're honest with ourselves. But how many of you have had, at some point during the week, a sense of just having it all together? To having life figured out? To having those moments where it's like, yeah, I'm good. I'm having a good week. I have everything I need. We all have those moments too. And then we also all have moments where we're just, we're just dealing with stuff, don't really care all too much, just kind of going through the motions. If that's us as individuals over the course of the week, why should we expect any different from the people that we encounter on a daily basis? You can talk to one person one day and they're just doing fantastic. You can talk to them the next day, they're down and depressed. You can talk to them the next day, they don't care about God. You talk to them the next day, they hate God. You talk to them the next day, they love God. And then the next day, they don't want to talk to you. It wavers. People waver. People go through different seasons. And if we expect to be a people who really want to minister sincerely and effectively to other people, then we need to be aware of that. Because we need to be aware of where we're at on a daily basis. Have you ever woken up and you just say, oh boy, I'm in one of those moods. It's just going to be tough. I'm really going to have to battle to put a smile on my face. I'm really going to have to battle to have some degree of life and hope. And then you've had other days where you just can't wait to get up because you know awesome things are going to happen. And then there are going to be other days you're going to wake up and you feel like, man, I'm just pretty darn awesome. I got a great family. Got a great spouse. My job is fantastic. You know, I'm so smart. I'm so good looking. That's how I feel so many mornings. But we waver back and forth. So I want to talk about just our approach to ministry, to people. Not necessarily as an official ministry platform, you are signed up for this list of this kind of service, but just when you walk out of here and you go see people, you go hang out with your friends or family afterwards, you go to your job if you are blessed to get out and actually go to an office and see people. I haven't seen most of my coworkers for about 3 or 4 months. And I like my coworkers. I actually got to stop in the other day and everyone's like, Matt, how you doing? I'm like, how are you doing? It's great. It's like, okay, see you next month. So in our office, we have a little whiteboard. And whenever one of us goes into the office to pick up a car or a piece of paper, we just write, I was here, such and such date. I'm still alive. You know, one of the ladies in my office, she ended up with COVID. And she came into the office and she wrote down, I made it. So if you're blessed to be able to go out and see people and talk to people, hopefully this message is some degree of encouragement and just a challenge for you. And again, also keep in mind a spirit of introspection, because I think we are those people as well. So let's start off, let's get into Exodus chapter 6. As I was reading through this Torah portion, as I was praying about it, Yahweh laid on my heart 3 different kinds of people. 3 different situations or statusi, whatever the plural of that word would be, that we all go through. My daughter's smirking at me, shaking her head. Parents, you have a preteen daughter who you say something and they get the eye roll. I don't ever get that from my daughter. She's just fantastic all the time. But we have multiple different statuses, I think, in this Torah portion. So the first one, if you read in Exodus chapter 6, verse 9, Moses is going to Israel, and he's talking about all the things that Yahweh is going to do. And he says in verse 9, Moses reported this to the Israelites, but they did not listen to him because of their discouragement and harsh labor. They were in slavery. And they had pretty much at this point given up the idea that Yahweh was going to save them. But as I was reading this, I went back to last week's Torah portion. And it is just really funny that if you look at chapter 6 and verse 9 in particular, they just gave up. All of Israel gave up. But at the end of chapter 4, when Moses first goes to Israel and he goes to the leaders, he starts sharing similar stuff, that God has not forgotten them. And so in verse 29, chapter 4, Moses and Aaron brought together all the elders of the Israelites, and Aaron told them everything the Lord had said to Moses. He also performed the signs before the people, and they believed. And when they heard that the Lord was concerned about them and had seen their misery, they bowed down and worshiped. So here is a people that have been enslaved, that have been beaten, that have been downtrodden, that are just, you know, miserable. God has forgotten them. Moses and Aaron come in, they throw down a stick, turns into a snake, and they're just all sorts of excited. They believe that Yahweh cares for them, and they're excited. They worship God. They bow down. They recognize this is it. This is the culmination of all the promises that God has made to us over the years. This is the culmination of all the promises and the covenant that Yahweh made to the patriarchs before us. One of the things that was interesting to me over the course of the study is, at this point, up until now, Yahweh has been dealing with individuals. He's been dealing with family units. All throughout the book of Genesis, it is the accounting of God spoke to this person, and this person, and this family. And there were elements of saying, yes, I'm going to have a people in the future, but God's dealings at that point were with individuals. This is really the first time where Yahweh came and said, okay, you bunch of individuals are a nation, and now I am going to deal with you as a nation. I think that's part of it, as I was looking over the Torah study and as I was thinking about it, is that Yahweh had made covenants with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and it says in there that I didn't make my name known to them, but now I am. And I think that is so absolutely powerful, is that you have a God who made all these covenants with a group of people, but it wasn't until he started dealing with a community, a collection of believers, that's when he made his name known. It wasn't necessarily to the individual. He definitely had a real relationship with them. He shared his character. He shared his heart. He shared his salvation for those people. That's kind of a controversial statement to a lot of people, is that God offered salvation to his people back in the beginning of Genesis. There is salvation all throughout Genesis. There is mercy. There is grace all throughout the book of Genesis and the entire Torah. Throw that out to some of your friends and see what kind of response you get. Mercy and grace and salvation didn't come till Yeshua. Oh, let me just tell you something different. You don't think the act of just sacrificing an animal on your behalf is not merciful and gracious? That is the epitome of mercy and grace. That is the exact same mercy and grace we put on Yeshua and his actions, isn't it? The idea that something else's sacrifice is enough to negate your sin and your falling short. Whether it was a bull, sheep, pigeon, piece of bread, whatever it is, that's mercy and grace. And so I think it's interesting that Yahweh at this point, he made his name known, I am the Lord, when he was dealing with an entire body. I think that's really cool. I think that's a picture of our relationship with him, is that you can have the most on-fire relationship with God that you think, but there is something very different, very unique, and very powerful when you choose to come be a part of that body and you say, I lay down my individual stuff that I'm going on, that's got going on, and I'm instead going to focus on what the body is doing. That is hard, especially when you have had hard weeks, when you've had hard months and hard years, to be able to say, there's a lot of junk going on, but I choose to put that down so instead I can build up the body. And I think that's what Yahweh, that's what Moses did with Israel at the end of chapter 4. He said, God has not forgotten you. Israel goes, yay, thank you, I worship you. And then what happens in chapter 5? If you have cute little headings at the top of your verses and your chapters, which probably were not in the original Torah, just so you guys know. But when it says here at the end of chapter 4, and when they heard that the Lord was concerned about them and had seen their misery, they bowed down and worshipped, period, cute little heading, bricks without straw. And then what did Israel do? They stopped believing at that point. They were all sorts of happy when they found out God was going to take care of them, that he had not forgotten them. And then you get the cute little heading, bricks without straw, and then they said, never mind. Because life got hard, and then in verse 9, chapter 6, they did not listen to him because of their discouragement and harsh labor. Isn't that our early morning sometimes? You wake up, and all of a sudden, you are just thankful that God has remembered you. You are just really excited that Yahweh has taken care of you. As our brother over there, you know, he commented last week, you know, there was that one night where he went to bed, and he's like, see what happens in the morning. And when he woke up in the morning, was he happy? Yes. Was his wife happy? Yes. Were we all happy? Yes. But then immediately after that, some struggles can occur in our lives. And we're like, whoa, hold on. I don't know that you really... Because God, if you remembered me and you remember the covenant, how come you don't remember me at 11:30 when everything is just going chaotic around me? When I have to start making bricks without straw and I have to work harder and people are beating me. And even some of my brothers and sisters, when you look at who is often the taskmasters over the Hebrew slaves, it was other Hebrews that were doing it. So they were definitely in bondage. They were definitely downtrodden. They were, you know, just not able to hear life. They were not able to hear the victory that God had for them and the promises that he was going to fulfill. So we find people like that, and we are people like that, as I've said, who struggle all the time. So Yahweh has laid on your heart, let's say, hypothetically. Guess what? He has. But just for politeness sake, hypothetically, he has called you to go share life, to go minister, to go share the gospel, whatever it is, with someone, and you know they are just broken. They are done, they're enslaved, they just see no hope, no opportunity for Yahweh dealing with them in the future. It's important to say, you know, to know who it is that you're dealing with, because if someone is in that situation, do you think it is helpful to go to them and say, yeah, you are a wretched, sinful creature who just sins against God all the time? Do you think that time with that person is going to be very effective? If they are just struggling with so much, they, you know, their wife, their husband has left them, their kids are sick, they just got laid off, and you say, well, that's because you don't love God. And that's because you sinned 5 times this week in this particular way. That's exactly why you're going through that. How much longer is that conversation going to last? Not much longer. How many conversations with that person are going to be had probably after that? No. That relationship might very well be cut off. So what should you do? And I'm going to ask you guys this in a little bit towards the end, but I'm going to offer up just a couple of tools, a couple of perspectives that as I was praying about, I felt like Yahweh was saying, here's how you can reach out and minister to those people. Number one is patience. If you are dealing with people, if you are talking to people, if there are family members who are in that downtrodden and enslaved point in their life, be patient with them. It is probably not going to be a conversation that is going to bear fruit that afternoon over coffee. Probably not. It might not be a conversation or victory or fruit that happens after, you know, just really meeting once a week for a couple months. You have to have patience with people because you have to let Yahweh be the one that does the work in their spirit, not your words, not your efforts. Now, definitely we can spend time interceding and praying on their behalf, and that's one of the few consistent things throughout these 3 different groups of people I'm going to mention. Is that intercession, that prayer, that sincerity, being sincere in your concern for other people, in the way that you witness to them, in the way that you treat them, and just the care that you show for them. But having patience with those people that have so much on their heart, so much that is weighing them down, you just have a great deal of patience and allow them to work through the things that need to be worked through so that it is a genuine and sincere and complete healing that is going on in their life. And you have a great deal of empathy for that person. Empathy means I'm going to feel this with you. Sympathy means I'm sorry you're going through that. Empathy means I too know what it's like to go through all this junk. And I know you're hurting and I'm hurting for you because of this. I have been there. Sometimes I still am there. And so I want to just come and I want to be that person that can really support you and lift you up. And that's where Israel is. And so what Yahweh did, what Moses did, and how many times did Moses intercede on Israel's behalf all throughout this thing? It's amazing. But he continued to lift them up. Yahweh was so incredibly patient with Israel, wasn't he? I mean, how many of us, if we were God, that we would have just ditched Israel a long time ago. I feel like if I were God, you know, Noah, that's it. We might not have even gotten to Noah. It might have just been, nope, never mind. I'm going to be the God of, you know, the birds and the gazelles and all sorts of stuff. That's about all it's going to be. So God shows the ultimate patience there. So if God has called you to reach out to someone, to have a relationship with someone, recognize that they might be in that place of being enslaved to different kinds of sin, to fear, to sadness, to whatever it might be. And so when you begin to enter into that time, that relationship with them, be aware of who that might be, that they might be in that place. Also in this Torah portion, you see Pharaoh. Now, Pharaoh's got it going on, right? Pharaoh pretty much has nothing else that he has to worry about. He is the king over the most powerful nation, and essentially that makes him God in his eyes and in the eyes of millions of people or thousands of people, however big Egypt was at that point. It's one of the most majestic civilizations you've ever seen throughout history. He had it all figured out. And then Moses comes to him, and he starts just laying these things down. Well, there's this other God, and he wants to take care of these people, not the Egyptians, not your people. I mean, isn't that kind of a slap in the face to a man who considers himself God? That this God of the entire universe comes and says, I want to care for my people, and by the way, it's not you or yours. It's these people that you have enslaved. The weak ones, the ones that you think aren't worth anything, those are the people that I want to take care of. That is a slap in the face to Pharaoh. It's like no wonder he got bitter and started having that hard heart. Exodus 5:2, but Pharaoh said, who is the Lord that I should obey his voice to let Israel go? I do not know the Lord, and besides, I will not let Israel go. He's basically saying, so what? I don't need God. I don't need this kind of drama going on in my life. I have no needs. I can't get much greater than I am. I am pretty darn successful in everything I do. Why do I need God in my life? Have you ever known people that are like that? So would it be helpful if you went to this person who has everything figured out, who is the most powerful, they're your boss of a major company, they're excited, they know everything, they have huge power. Would it be helpful to go to them and say, God has amazing things for you. He has promises of life, of victory, of prosperity. Do you think many people who are successful bosses are going to say, oh, yes, I need more victory. I need more wealth. I need more prosperity. They're going to say, no, I don't need that because I have everything. Why do I need a God to give me all these great things when I already have all these great things? So it's kind of important that you recognize that if you're going to share with your boss, which is that involves a lot of prayer, that involves a lot of discernment, that can be a hard thing. There's a lot of tact that has to go with that, a lot of prayer, a lot of just seeking Yahweh's Spirit to find out how he wants you to deal with that. So how do you approach someone like that? It's interesting because we always talk about the lukewarm, and we're going to get into this passage here in a bit. The lukewarm, we kind of have this, and this is how I was up until this week, is that the lukewarm are just the ones that don't care. They really just don't care. You know, because what do you associate with lukewarm? You are neither or cold. I mean, isn't that just the picture of apathy? But what it says here in Revelation 3, he's talking to one of the churches, Laodicea, so because you are lukewarm and neither hot nor cold, I will spit you out of my mouth. Okay, we get that. That's kind of what we associate lukewarm with. Because you say, I am rich and have become wealthy and have need of nothing. I think that is just a whole different picture of lukewarmness that I'd never seen before. Lukewarmness to me was, God is neither good, he's neither bad. Kind of, to me, like a lukewarm person was an agnostic, if you know what that is. Maybe a God, may not be a God, who knows? Maybe to the point of being what's called a deist, which means I believe that there is some higher power, and that's it. But in reality, I'm starting to look at this whole idea of lukewarmness And I need to be careful with this. Pray about how I say this and what it means. In a lot of ways, that idea of being lukewarm, especially as it's communicated here, almost kind of gets into atheism in a way of like, I don't know if God exists. Probably not, because I've got everything figured out. I don't need a God. Don't necessarily believe in a God. So that was an interesting twist for me of the whole idea of lukewarm, not just being someone who doesn't care, but someone who's got it all figured out and has no need for Yahweh. So how do you deal with people like this? And again, I'm going to ask you guys in a bit what tips, what tricks, what approaches you guys have experienced over your years in ministering to people. So if you have someone who's got it all figured out, who seems like they don't need anything, get to know them on a personal level, something deeper than all of the blessings that they have. Don't just sit there and indulge like, oh, you have this many houses and you have this car and it's wonderful and aren't you so blessed and well taken care of. One of the things that I was thinking about, and as I was doing my study and this week and reading different accounts, is Yahweh hit me with the fact is that he came not for the healthy but the sick. It's not the healthy that needs a doctor, it's the sick. So many people, when they are sick, you can't tell. I have a coworker who just dealt with cancer and just beat it. She had no idea she had it. Because she was great. She was doing well. She just went in for a random exam. It's like, oh, by the way. And so you look at people who are, you know, just successful, are confident, have all the things in the world to be blessed with, and all of a sudden there is a sickness going on in them, a sickness that is no different than what each of us have. And so what does a doctor or physician have to do to figure out if you are sick or if you're healthy? They have to diagnose it. How do they diagnose it? They ask questions. They do tests. They do little experiments. They don't just look at you and say, oh, you look fine, we're okay. As believers, as someone who wants to share life, truth, or befriend people, to share the gospel, whatever it might be, you've got to take the time to ask some questions. You got to take some time to get, you know, below the surface and find out what's really going on in their life. What kind of sickness is there that you don't even know about? Because that successful person may say, I don't need God, I'm fine. But as you start to probe, as they start to share stuff, they realize that they have needs, that they have holes, that they have brokenness that ordinarily might not come out had you not taken the time to start digging into their life. And you do it with sincerity. You don't just go in there and say, gosh, those people got it all figured out, but I guess I got to speak to them. I guess I got to do something. You have a care about those people. Is it hard sometimes to share life with people who have a better life than you? Yeah. I don't want to go and spend time with someone who has a better life than me and tell them about how their life should be better like mine. That's hard. But Matt, you have a $3,000 Pontiac. Zach totally just insulted my car this morning. He just said, oh, it's like some little Pontiac or whatever. I'm like, that's a great car. That's a fantastic car. How hard is it for me to say, look at my little Pontiac and you've got this Corvette? Wait till it snows and he's just sitting there doing donuts all over. I can't go. And all of a sudden I pull up with the truck. I'm like, ah. If people are truly sick and need healing, you need to ask questions to diagnose what's really going on. That's how you can kind of reach out to those people. And then the third that I just saw through this, not so much scriptural evidence in this particular Torah portion, but just because this is how I tend to be. I'm kind of an ignorance is bliss guy, as many of you know. That's kind of nothing much really rattles me that much. If I encounter some sort of hardship in my life, this too shall pass. I'm not going to give a whole lot of energy to it. But the downside of that is when there's really good stuff in my life, I can be kind of like, this too shall pass. Just kind of a not getting so caught up in what's going on. And so there are people that you will encounter in your life that just really don't care either way. How frustrating is it to go and share the gospel or share life or give encouragement or give challenge to someone who's like, I don't really care. Like, you want to see some conviction. You want to see some change. You want to see some gumption in their life. And it's like, if I'm going to take the time to get out of my comfort zone and share life with you, I want some sort of response. Like, let me know that this is important to you. And then they don't care. And it's like, well, why am I bothering to waste my time? Why am I going to invest time in this person if they just don't care whatsoever? Zephaniah 1:12. How many of you have ever read the book of Zephaniah? How many of you didn't even know there was a book called Zephaniah? A couple of years ago, we went through the minor prophets during our Torah study. It was really great. We got into Habakkuk. We got into Malachi. We got into all sorts of stuff. I was waiting to see who picked up on that. Famous Italian prophet. Zephaniah 1:12. It will come about at that time, I will search Jerusalem with lamps, and I will punish the men who are stagnant in spirit, who say in their hearts, the Lord will not do good or evil. That is how we are a lot of times, where we're just stagnant. I mean, I've gone through whole bouts of stagnancy. That's a word. It's not. I just made it up, and you guys are free to use it. No, stagnancy. That's what I'm saying. Stagnation's fine, but just watch. Someone in here is going to say stagnancy at some point during this week, and you're just going to be like, oh, God. Thank you, Matt, for that. Thank you for using up a valuable word I could have had in my vocabulary with stagnancy. But I've dealt with that over the last, year or so. I mean, it's hard when the church burns down. And you're walking in all the time. You're like, really? I got to deal with this? I got to tear down that drywall now? Really? That's where my life is at? That's the stagnancy that I have going on? It's hard. But there are people like that in your life that are stagnant, that have no desire for God, don't really care. God's not going to do good. He's not going to do evil. Hebrews 5:11 says, concerning him, Yeshua, we have much to say, and it is hard to explain since you have become dull of hearing. My hearing can be awfully dull all the time. All of us have our phases where we're like that. So how do you go and approach someone? How do you share life with someone who just is apathetic towards their life? I found establish meaning and purpose in their life. Establish a goal. Establish a greater purpose. This is something that Andrea and I have promoted in different marital counselings and whatnot. When you're really annoyed by what your spouse is doing, like you just want to say, they always do this, they always do that. And you want your time with them, your conversations, the conflict resolution to be dealing with all of the junk and all of the sin and all of the just faults in the marriage on their part. That's what you really want to focus on. But what I've seen is you say, hey, we're struggling with this, but instead of focusing on that, what is the standard? What is the purpose? What is the role that God has for our marriage? What does God want a good marriage to look like? A godly marriage to look like? Let's not focus on the fact that our marriage isn't godly at this point, or that you are not a godly husband, or that you are not a godly wife, but what does a godly husband look like? What does a godly wife look like? And let's push for that. That's what you deal with people who are wavering back and forth, back and forth. One of my most favorite passages in all of Scripture is Romans chapter 7. You don't know what that is? That is Paul saying, I do what I don't want to do, but I don't do what I want to do. And sometimes I'm acting in the Spirit, sometimes I'm acting according to the flesh. Boy, if you ever just feel like you're the only one in the world wavering, read Romans chapter 7 and you'll feel a whole lot better about yourself. Because if Paul can go through that stuff and still become one of the greatest ambassadors for Yahweh ever, then that gives us some degree of hope. Establish consistency in those people's lives. If they're going up and down and wavering and, just struggling with, I'm happy, I'm sad, I'm happy, I'm sad. You know, my mom, in her last few years, she was diagnosed by me with no, medical credentials, a manic depressive. I really think that's how she was. And one day I would call her and she just loved me and loved everything and how's the kids and oh, everything is great. And then there were other times I would talk to her and just everything was wrong. And I got to the point where I couldn't have any conversation with her. We got to the point where we couldn't even talk about Charlie Blackman of the Colorado Rockies. She loved Charlie Blackman until he got popular. And then I couldn't even talk to her about that. And we got into the stereotypical, well, how's the weather in Colorado Springs? Oh, it's terrible. Well, what do you really do with that? You be consistent. You be the one that's always establishing life and always excited, always having a purpose going on in there, going on. Because you become that that test, that litmus test where they say, you know what, I want to be someone like that who has that kind of consistency in their life. I want to spend just a little bit of time here in Romans. In Hebrews 5. Oh, we're getting kind of close to time. We won't get into that. The one thing I will say about the end of Hebrews chapter 5 that I just mentioned is it can be a little bit discouraging because it's talking about falling away from Yahweh. And it says, in fact, though by this time you ought to be teachers, you need someone to teach you the elementary truths of God, God's word all over again. You need milk, not solid food. If you've been a believer for more than a year at some point, and you read that scripture, boy, that just depresses you, doesn't it? Because you say, really? I've been at this a long time, and you're saying that with these struggles, I need to go back to the milk, that I am not worthy or capable of studying and getting into the real meat of stuff? But what I love that it says here, verse 13, anyone who lives on milk, being still an infant, is not acquainted with the teaching about righteousness, but solid food is for the mature, who by constant use have trained themselves to distinguish good from evil. Okay, so I need to be still on the milk, according to Revelation or Hebrews chapter 5. That's what it's saying. It's saying that I should be on solid food, but I need milk. That's kind of depressing. But then you get into the beginning of chapter 6, and I love this because it's a quick transition. It says, therefore, let us move beyond the elementary teachings about Christ and be taken forward to maturity. It is a matter of a simple choice, really, of whether you want to stay on the milk or whether you want to move forward into the meat of your relationship with God. It doesn't say in here, okay, you've been on the milk, and it's going to be a 3-month weaning period. It's just saying, let's move on. And that's where we're at. And I think for all of us who legitimately and sincerely we struggle with our relationship with God and how vibrant and real it is that there comes a point in time, and maybe it's even as I'm saying these words, where you can say, yeah, I've been the one that's been on the milk. I've been the one that's stagnant. I've been the one that just is not really grasping the greater things of God's kingdom. That you have the ability, not just because of how awesome you are, but because Yahweh's Spirit's in you saying, okay, let's turn this thing around. Let's just move forward right now. You know how you develop constant use of these practices? You got to start with doing it once. If you had already been doing it, you would have already been doing constant use. But if you feel like you're not consistently using the truths and the life Yahweh has for you, and you want to be doing that consistently, do it once. And that's what begins the whole process. So for this body, and I think so many people in here that I know, you guys are at that point where you guys are on the meat, where you guys aren't satisfied with the milk anymore. Well, Tessa's satisfied with the milk. She's cute. We don't blame her. But it's we are at that point. And I'm not going to say anymore, we need to do this. We need to do this. We're there. This body is there. We are at the point of being on the meat. And if you don't feel like you are, well, we're going to have Oneg. And hopefully there's some meat back there somewhere. And it'll be symbolic that we are going to be on the meat. All right, let's go ahead and stand and then... Zach and Joy have prepared lunch for us. All right. So, Father, thank you so much for today. Thank you for this gathering of men and women. Thank you for their hearts to know you, to understand you more, and to not just be content with that knowledge and understanding of who you are, but the desire to share that with other people, that there is a selflessness in them, and that there is a desire to serve you and to serve others, to bring other people into a greater understanding of who you are. And I just thank you for the openness and the willingness to serve you. Father, for those of us who might be struggling, having that desire, I ask that you would continue to work on our hearts, that you would work on our spirits, that you would soften and circumcise our hearts so that we would be more open to your will for us, for your people, and for your kingdom, and for this world. Father, that you would give us wisdom and discernment in knowing who it is that you want us to speak to, who it is that you want us to share life with, and that you would give us that wisdom and discernment to know how to share that life, whether it be through words, whether it be through deeds, whether it be through just listening or being available. Thank you that you are teaching each and every one of us how to not just be content with our own relationship with you, to not just be content with the basic things that we know, but that you are causing us to move forward. You are causing us to mature, and may we realize that we have already matured. Father, we are different people. We are stronger people than we have ever been before, and that you have purposes for us and that we would be obedient to them. So we love you, Father. Thank you for your Sabbath. Thank you for allowing us to be a part of it. Yes. We love you, and we pray this in Yeshua's name. Yes. Amen.